You're listening to the Gold Squadron Podcast, your home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
This is episode 54 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. I am your host, Dion Morales, and today I am joined by Dice App on Stream, Nate Moore.
You know who the real winner of the System Open was? The Dice App. You all saw it.
And back-to-back champion of the Frozen Ice Planet, William Hagwood.
Congratulations, buddy. You did it 2 years in a row.
Oh yeah, all the luck. I don't know how it's even possible.
Skill.
Well, skills, you know, 90%, and then I needed the 10% luck to make it through.
It all worked out. So our plan today is, of course, to talk about the Hoth Open, Adepticon, Chicago Mandalore, whatever you want to call it. I think we like calling it Hoth just because it's like ours, but whatever. And we're also going to talk about some meta stats that I was able to compile about this event. And we're just going to talk about some things, you know, with the game and how we think it's progressing. And, you know, we'll get there in a moment, but yeah, before we go too far, I do want to say thank you to everybody who watched and everybody who became a Twitch Prime subscriber over the weekend. You guys are awesome. When it comes to other live streams, we don't have any major events coming up for a while. The next thing we will hopefully be streaming will be Worlds. But every Wednesday night up until Worlds, or most Wednesday nights up until Worlds, we will be streaming from Pastimes, the home of Gold Squadron, and bringing you guys either league play or our X-Wing Mind Games recording sessions. You guys get to see those going on live. So one or the other.
Unlock the hologram.
All right, gentlemen. So we're in our section to talk about the System Open. You know, I want to start with just talking about highlights from the weekend. Since this is, I think, our tradition now, we start from the bottom to the top. So sorry, Nate, I think you have to go first. How did your Adepticon go?
Oh, it went beautiful. You know, I went 6-0 and, you know, I didn't have any issues. No, I bombed out pretty quick. I went against my buddy Danny and he had Nim Miranda in the second round. And that was my first loss. I made it to round two. I made it to the second part. You know, I went two wins, one loss in the first part. And then right fourth game in the system, what do I go against? I go against Alex. I forget his last name. It's like Alex, not Guinness, but he's a good guy.
What
he's a good
was
player.
He flying?
He was flying a Fen Lothal, which I hate.
Alan Spogenson?
Jeez, I forget the last name.
Mogeson.
Yeah, it's Mogeson. But he's a great guy. He's a great player. And I hate ghost lists, and it's always really, really hard for me to do well. A lot of people are like, oh, you'll do fine. You're Rey Miranda. You're going to do fine on this. No. It's a time limit, and I have to play the range game perfectly, and I have to roll perfectly, and I have to hope that they don't, otherwise I die. But the worst part about it is that I had the ghost to 3 hit points, Miranda's full life, and I was like, oh, I've won this. Oh, my God, I'm good. TLT. Nothing. Even with mods, no damage to the ghost. Ghost had no mods either. I take 4 damage. Wow. Okay, that was bad. I just need to do 3 damage before I die. TLT. Nothing. I take all the damage.
I'm sorry.
Last round. TLT. Hit. Oh, I finally did damage. That's great. I'm dead. So it was really, really, really bad dice variance. And you know, it is what it is. I did do the hyperspace and I had, oh God, that was such an uphill battle. And I fought all the way through that to the top and everything. And
so you ended what, 5-1 in the hyperspace?
I forget the guy's name. Oh, he's a really good player too. Oh, he always wears the red shirt and he's got the glasses.
You don't even remember our podcast brethren. I should let you drown. I know who it is.
Tell me, because I totally forgot. I can die
Tim
in a fire.
Tim Dugan of Radio TCX.
He's a great guy and he's a great player. Holy crap. That was such like a, I thought I had lost that match. And then just by sheer luck, either that or he just felt bad for me and how bad I was doing. And he threw the game on purpose. I was just like, I'll just give it to him because I'm nice.
I doubt it.
You doubt it?
Doubt it.
Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, for myself, I did make it into stage three, 5-1. Woo! Yeah, took a lot of work to get there. And, you know, probably my biggest highlight of that was I did have to go up against three ghost lists to get there. Yeah, so it was a good time. It's a good time. Biggest highlight has to be probably my top 32 match against Nick Tobin. It's the one bank heard around the world. There was an engagement we had in the middle of the board where if this one, like all his other moves literally land him on a rock, like 100% for sure, except for possibly this one bank. And we're looking at each other and we're looking at Asajj. He has Asajj Nim. And he knows I'm about to bring the boats in to get range on Nim and just missile him to 2 or 3 hit points. But if he can hit one of my boats and use a tractor beam from the Shadowcaster title to get it on a rock so it can't shoot, then I'm a sad boy. And we're looking at it for a while. He dials it in. And literally in all my games of X-Wing, this is the closest maneuver to an obstacle I had ever seen. Like the plastic came down and it never overlapped, but man, it was in contact the whole time with that side. And it ended in contact with the side, but that's like physically adjacent does not equal overlapping. And it was in the maneuver template all the way. Like it was fine. And I just kind of look up at him and go, all right, good game. You know, we ended up playing it out. And I got close. I did get close, mm-hmm. But not quite close enough to win that game. And yeah, so great game, Nick. I was definitely worried about the matchup. And, it was good.
A great player, man.
Oh, he's awesome.
He like nearly wrecked me. And everything. I did some damage and I killed one of his ships like when we did the Wisconsin regionals. But yeah, he knocked me out round one there. And I was like, oh man, I hope he doesn't do that to Dion. And he did. And I was like, damn. Oh well.
Yeah.
He's a good player.
It happens. Really it good. Happens.
Was he the only scum player?
He was the only scum player in the top 32, yes.
Wow. Okay, we'll get into that later too.
Yep. All right. Well then, William, let's talk about your weekend, my friend.
Why should we talk about Will? Did he do anything special this weekend? I don't know.
I have no idea.
I did okay. So I started Thursday with Hyperspace. And actually, it was going pretty good. I had won 3 games, 3-0. So I thought, you know, things are looking up. I had the chance to go undefeated there. And they would make the rest of the weekend, you know, a breeze because I already got into the Invitational. Round 4, I get paired up against Amir. We'll talk about him more later on, but his name is Andrew. What's Andrew's name?
Schmidt.
There's way too many consonants in that.
I had a teacher named Schmidt. I had no problem saying that in kindergarten.
Okay. Well, just like reading it anyways. I'm also super bad with names, so. Anyway, so I got to play Andrew for the first time of the weekend in Hyperspace. And, you know, mirror match, his Miranda, C-3PO, Strezra. He's got draw on selflessness on Lork. Because that is correct that, I guess you guys didn't say it, but we all brought the same list that we had been flying. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so I flew Kylo and 2 adaptability boats. Nate brought Ray, Miranda. Engine Ray.
Yeah, I was the best out of the... I was the highest of the 4s and 2s. Anyways, I digress. Keep going, Will.
All right, so I'm playing Andrew. And we killed each other's ships, our support ships. And it ended up being my Miranda with no shields, double stressed or triple stressed, something like that. And then his Miranda unstressed because I was focusing down on Lorik instead. And we played it out, played it very quick, and he ended up killing my Miranda, but just like super hot dice, like two hits on every TLT shot. And eventually my Colin ones ended out. And so he took the game, and you know, we had a good time. But it wasn't until after the game that I was like, you know, okay, well, congratulations, man. Hope you go undefeated. And he says, oh no, I lost last round. I was 2-1. And I was like, oh my God, I got pared down and lost in this hyperspace. And I actually went around and was just stewing, smoked a cigarette and was, you know, trying to find a beer or something. And was just stewing about how this X and one took out an undefeated player who had the chance to get the invite. And turns out, next round, round four, I get paired up against, or I get matched up with Tyler Tippett, and I was paired up and he was paired down. So I'm a 3-1 going up against a 4-0. And I'm just like, man, everything I just spent 10 minutes complaining about, now I'm in that situation.
Right.
And I was just like, Tyler, you know, you want to get some, like, lunch or something? You want to go like walk the con? Because like we could play it out. I mean, he's got Racklo and Vader, which is not a bad matchup for either one of us. I would say 50-50, right? It comes down to like dice rolls and good positioning and stuff. And I was just like, you know, I'm not gonna try to take you out and prevent you from going undefeated. So I just conceded to him. And we actually had a good time when was actually able to demo some games and walk the vendor hall. And I think that we had a much better time away from the table doing that. And he ended up going 6-0 then too. So
yeah, he got the invite. Yep. That's awesome to Tyler. Tyler and Nick both got the invite, so good for them.
Yep. So at least my concedement wasn't in vain.
Well, it's interesting you said that, Will, because I actually met the guy who was actually who was 32nd, because we were supposed to have 31 people in the top 32, and he was actually 4-0, and he went against like a 3-2 or something. He got pared down, and so if the guy who he went against actually won, he would get nothing. But he would have been able to go on and, you know, get into the cut and everything at 5-0 and everything. And the guy decided to go, well, I'm just going to crush your dream, and crush his dream, which I thought was super bogus at that point. You're not helping yourself. So it's,
but I mean, there's people who want to play. People have their own self pride and don't want to just lay down for people. And that's totally respectable. I mean, they came to play. It's their decision.
It is. It's just, I don't know. People can be people, and they do the things that they do.
This is true about all things.
Yes, it is. Now, do I necessarily agree with those things? That's up for another debate. Sorry, I keep sidetracking us. Keep going.
Anyways, I thought about dropping hyperspace, but I'm glad I didn't, because actually I got, on the last round, I played Kevin Lights. And we had a great game. He made a positional mistake in the opening engagement. He ended up bumping both his Corrin and his Finn Rao, which just opened him up to real bad times and swung the game heavily in my favor right from the opening engagement. I was able to, you know, check out the list, see Kevin's flight patterns and his strategy a little bit, which definitely helped me later on in the cut.
So you got to play against two of your top cut opponents in the hyperspace.
Yes. So, yeah, my decision to take off Thursday and come out and get some practice games in was immensely helpful. And it was definitely the right call.
Very cool.
So that was just hyperspace. My the open started out the same way. Went 3-0. Got to play Ben. I forget Ben's last name, but he was a local Chicago, and I had played him beat previously in the Redemption tournament at the regional. So that was a good time. I played Ben in the hyperspace too. So then I played him in the cut as well. He was flying Ghost Finn, which was a scary matchup for me. But
yeah, how does your build typically do against Ghost Finn?
Not well, normally. Things have to go very good for me, and I have to get that ghost stress stuff. I had to get the ghost stressed, so he can't roll his primary attacks with full mauls, and I need to separate the ghost from Finn.
From Finn, yeah.
And I was able to do that. I came in, spooked the ghost off, and then was able to just charge on through and find Finn Rao and take him out. And actually, in our open game, he made, or he put a crit through on Strezra that made him pilot skill zero. And I was actually able to get a snapshot.
Sweet.
Yeah, I was like, thanks. Like, I'll take it. Like, could be way worse. So that was pretty good. Ben was a great opponent both games. And they were surprisingly very close both times. So I was able to pull those off against what I think is a bad matchup for my list. Simply because we don't have a lot of offensive modifiers to go through Sensor Jammer.
Right.
Let's see. What was the other highlights? Oh, I faced Daniel. Want to give a big shout out to Daniel who made the cut with Nim Miranda.
And yeah, Daniel got me too. Great kid.
Yeah, we had a hilarious game that after the second round of combat, it was just Nim Miranda. It was just Miranda on Miranda.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. Yeah. So you already got practice on that too. So,
yeah, yeah. He actually never shot at my Ezra. One bomb, one thermal, and Sabine. My harpoon condition that I was trying, I actually rerolled a crit with a target lock to prevent the harpoon triggering from going off, but it still did. And then two harpoon triggers from him killed Ezra without him ever taking a shot at it. He also blinded my Lorik on the first opening attacks with Miranda's harpoon.
Proton bomb.
So, yeah. Okay. So between those two, Lorik and Ezra, both of them, or between the two of them, they shot once. And so my Miranda did all the work in that. I just got some good bombs off, and I ended up blinding him. Took a range one attack on his Miranda. I had initiative, and put through a blinded, which means he couldn't heal. He did have a win condition though. I was harpooned and had two shields and one hull. He could have simultaneously killed us had he just put a crit through on his TLT. And it didn't come up. So I just squeaked out of that one by the narrowest of margins. Just pure luck. I mean, good flying, sure, but
cut that up later on. I told that story. It just sounded nuts.
Yeah, that's Daniel Fiorentini out of Columbus Raven Squadron.
Yep. He was a great guy to play against. But I narrowly squeaked out of that one. I think that was round four because we just had came back from break. Round five, I played a mirror match against Rob Ross, who got, I believe, second in cut with a crazy high MOB. I think I'm the only person who took down his ships, I think.
Yeah, his MOV was... I have it right here. It was 1,078.
Damn.
1,078. So he must have lost an Ezra at some point in time, other than the time I killed his Lorik and Ezra. But, yeah, that mirror match, he had lightning reflexes, which actually helped him out a lot because it was able to get his Lork behind mine and put through one last range one attack that killed my Lork, but in doing so triggered the harpoon and killed his Lork as well. But then it was just all downhill. I think he took out my Ezra before I could take down his, and I couldn't. I was just wasting shots shooting at his Ezra. Nothing was falling. And he ended up pulling ahead and getting me. I just never had any attack modifiers. I had to, felt the bane of my own creation, or not my creation, but what I've tried to make infamous here, the Strezra. I had to be on the receiving side of it, and was not good.
Right.
And then I finished out with a dash poe, which I just did what I do to ships who love their actions and have terrible greens, which was shut them down with stress. And then see, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. I think that's a that's a good thing just to kind of talk about the list here before we go on too far. So if you're not super familiar with the build, it's a Miranda, pretty tanky Miranda with C-3PO, TLT, bomblet, harpoon, and long range scanners. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, the long range. I prefer it to guidance chips because I only have one harpoon. If I did have two harpoons, guidance chips is the way to go.
Right. And then the Ezra Snapshot Hera R3A2. And then Lorik with, you have Selflessness Tactician and Ray. The couple things that I really like that synergize in your list is the fact that you could potentially up to triple stress a ship in one turn if you get a snapshot off from Ezra, a primary, and a range two shot from Lorik.
I wanted to ask, I know your thing was like you like to use the selflessness. Why do you use the selflessness rather than draw their fire? Where do you see the potential benefit, and where do you see like draw their fire's benefit, and like what kind of scenarios?
Honestly, it's matchup dependent. So there's really not a better version of the list. So it really comes down to who I'm playing against. In my opinion, selflessness works strong for two reasons. The first one is because I always have Ezra out front because he wants to get into range one as soon as possible to get off that snapshot. Because I lead with him, sometimes if I don't do it correctly, a ship has like a fast move or in a boost. Ezra can get caught in the first engagement without the other two. And that way I can just throw the Lorik evade at Ezra and then soak as much damage as I can. Soak up all the hits so that he isn't just taken down before we can fully engage the rest of my fleet. The other reason is expertise. Because if I don't get the snapshot off, Ezra only shoots a power skill 5, which means most likely that first round of combat, that the ship that I'm facing, like say for instance your Ray, would have expertise and is more likely to put out a lot of hits, and so that way Lore can take a multitude of hits. Rather than a single draw. Now draw is better versus like say Palp Aces, like 3 attack dice munitions carriers that can use guidance chips to change it to a crit. Or I guess like Mangler Cannons, you know, things that always do a crit normally. Obviously draw is better for that, but it's kind of matchup dependent. So it's really just a meta call in my opinion. Outside of the two reasons I gave.
Yeah, very cool. So let's go ahead and give us the highlights from the cut.
So the first game, actually looking through the top 16, this is my preferred matchup which was a 44 point Kylo, no title, and only primed thrusters instead of, say, advanced optics or something more expensive.
Sad.
So 44. It's pretty good. I mean, you could boost off of Talon rolls. He was able to boost.
I know. I know, but that 50-point Miranda versus your, 50-point Kylo, it's like, yeah. I have a chance. At 44 points, you're like, oh, no.
Yeah,
I have to kill everything.
Yeah, he has to kill Miranda. And that may him be much more aggressive with his Kylo than people should normally be. And then the other half of that's the good half of the matchup. The other great half of the matchup is he's flying X7 Deltas, who have terrible greens, just 2 through 5 straight. And they are very susceptible to stress. So once we got them stressed, they really couldn't turn around. And I actually tried to engage at the very bottom of the board to prevent those just easy 4Ks behind my squadron. And with shutting down the stress, I stressed up both of his deltas, and they couldn't K-turn. They had to just hard 3 in opposite directions. Made it that he was only shooting Kylo for most of the engagements. And we spooked off one of the deltas and then killed the other one. And I think he did end up taking down Lork, but I killed the other Delta, so I was up on points anyways that time. Never did take down that Kylo, though, but I hurt him pretty good, and he was less aggressive with me after that.
Yeah.
I faced Nick Tobin after that. Great player. Though
you avenged me.
Yes, I did avenge you. Me and Nick Tobin have had a long history now of me just taking them out of the cuts. I did it last year at Adepticon. I did it at our store championship at Pastimes. And I think one other time that I can't remember. It might have been the regional. I don't think it was the regional. But anyways, me and Nick have gone back and have competed a lot. And it seems that I'm always able to squeak out of there and crush his dreams. Though he's an amazing player and I always find great lists. He actually, the turning point in that game was he genius bombed an ion, and where my Miranda landed, I landed in arc of his Nim, and I was like, I'm pretty sure that ion gets me, and my one forward is going to be off the board. So then I had to decide if my 3-bank would keep me on the board with my slam. And I probably stared at it for way too long. He eventually was like, dude, you got to make a decision. And I was like, all right, well, we're slamming, because I'm pretty sure that ion bomb is just going to throw me off the board next round. So, the slam landed, and I was able to TLT. Nim was at 3 health, TLT'd him. And one of the TLTs put out a crit, triggering the harpoon, taking Nim down. And then it was Asajj had to go find Lork, who was floating around and just trying to, not die. And Miranda was just on the chase. Eventually, we killed that Asajj. So very tough. You have to take down that Nim super early in that, because you really can't waste time on Asajj. Let's see, who did I? Oh, then I faced Kevin after that. Kevin Leintz. Amazing player. Yeah. I mean, amazing for years now. And very intimidating. He's got all his world's dice out on display every time he plays. So, a little intimidating. flying Koran Finn Lorik. 100 point Koran, basically.
100 point ace. Yep.
And that one ended up, I traded Ezra for his Lork, which put me up on points. And that's when Kevin made the wrong decision, which was to shoot at Miranda. I had only Selflessness, 1 damage from Ezra. So I still had 2 shields on my Lorik, but my Miranda, I was spending shields left and right trying to take ships off the board of his. And he did the quick numbers and was like, I can kill that Miranda with a couple range ones, good double taps. And came down to last round. My Miranda, after his initial shot with Finn and Koran, put my Miranda at just 2 hull. And I had spent everything. Because I regenerated, I guess, right? So I must have only been at 1 hull. 1 hull, 1 shield, right?
1 hull, 1 shield, yep.
And all he has to do with 4 dice and a target lock is get 3, which is the average. That's like the numbers, right? You roll on 4, you should get 2. Pick up the other 2, roll another 1, and 3, yep. 3 puts me down. Can't dice out of it. And Kevin blanks out on his first attack. On his double tap. He blanks out on 4 dice. So he picks them all up and re-rolls them with the target lock and gets just 1.
Wow.
See, because it's the double tap. He already did as much as he could, and we tried to stop as much as we could. And I already spent my selflessness trying to keep Ezra alive. All he needed was really 2 hits to kill me, and he couldn't get it on 4 dice and a target lock. So
that is like the worst feeling.
Yeah.
That game was on stream. You can see it live. You can see the frustration. Yeah, really.
I would be super frustrated. That's for sure.
The situation, I believe that was the wrong call. He should have just focused down Lorik, who could only block 1, maybe 2 around, instead of my Miranda blocking essentially 3. Lorik, C-3PO, and regen. And I think that he thought if he focused down on Lorik, it would leave Miranda to just drop bombs and power up range 1 attacks until Koran died. So his calculation should have worked, but the dice denied him. I played Phil Horney after that with Quick Draw, Kylo, and Countdown. Striker. 2 Strikers made it into the cut, I saw.
I love how he's using Quick Countdown in this meta, because Countdown can survive surprisingly well against Ghostless.
You take it and you stick it range 1 in the arc.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm fine. 1 damage.
just anything that can shoot, harpoons specifically, they can always put out 4 damage, and you just don't even have to spend your token. You can just say 1 damage. So that was pretty good. I actually ended up getting his countdown with Ezra. I stressed him so he couldn't countdown. And then my snapshot did hit crit, and he blanked out on 2 dice. And it was like, for his immediate response was, "Oh yeah, countdown." And I was like, "No, I already stressed you. That's declared. That's when you're declared defender." And it was like, "Oh, sad." He had a chance to win. He got his quick draw back into the engagement. Got 3 hits against my range 3 Lorik with only 1 health. So I have reinforce, 2 dice. Can't roll a blank, and I don't, and he doesn't kill any points on my list, and I was able to get out of there pretty successfully. Then it was the final. Oh man, what do you want to say about the final, Dion?
All right, so you know, it was essentially a mirror match minus the difference between the draw their fire and selflessness. And I think what I really want to focus on, I mean, you guys both did all the things you needed to do to get the Miranda v. Miranda ending. And basically you got into a never ending loop state, right? It would seem like progress would be happening in the game. You know, oh, look, William got 1 shield, is down on shields. There was one point where you did get a damage card, but it just really quickly just kind of went back where you were kind of sitting at 2 shields the whole time and he was sitting at 4. And it just stayed there for, you know, about 45 minutes. And really the part I want to focus on, William, is there came a point where you guys decided that you guys needed a break. And I want to focus on that because on the stream, we didn't have table audio. So we didn't hear the conversation that you guys had. Like, how, just walk me through that.
There was a point when, because we have Chris Brown, Chico, our marshal, watching it as intently as he could watch two Mirandas. And there was a point, you know, hopefully you could agree with me, Dion, that we were going strong. Like, we were not wasting time in that engagement. Like,
you guys were making fast decisions.
Yep, dials down, dice are rolling. You know, if we disengaged, right, we're right back to grab your target lock and find the engagement and, you know, right back into it. And we just like without a break, you know what I mean? Just straight X-Wing for so long. And at about that 20-minute mark or so, Andrew had made a comment that he asked me, did I regenerate that shield when I attacked? And I looked at him and I was honestly like, I have no idea how many shields you have or had or will have. Like I looked down at my Miranda and I was like, I don't even know if I regenerated last round. We were just, our brains were just mush of just TLTs and healing and dice calculations and range control. We were just completely mushed. And I was fading. And I could tell simply by that question that Andrew was fading as well. Like it was getting to that point where the mistakes that we were not doing, well, we were flying perfectly. Like, huge credit to Andrew. Like, he was flying Miranda perfectly. And I hope that I was, in comparison, flying my Miranda perfectly as well. Nobody made a mistake for so long. And eventually, like, when that conversation came up, that's when I was just like, you know, we asked Chico how much time was left. Chico said about 20 minutes or so. And I believe it was me. I may be wrong, because like I said, I was pretty delirious at the time. That I just asked for final salvo. I was just like, Andrew, are you done? Because I am. And Andrew, you know, I think it was Duncan. Duncan made us, he was recording the game kind of on his phone or whatever. And he asked us both, like, do you guys want to keep playing? And we're both like, no, we're no longer having fun. And the game's literally going nowhere. And hasn't been for so long that we were just done. Like, we talked about it on the stream that in the time remaining, a winner could have been decided, but we would have needed to 4-7 rounds hit all sets of TLTs to kill each other. We had 7 rounds left of time, but like, we had played, what is your estimate, Dion? How many rounds do you think me or the Mirandas went against each other?
Oh man, you guys, I'm going to say something like maybe 17.
Okay.
Somewhere around there. It was a lot. It was a lot. I mean, that's more than what most games go, in total. But I mean, yeah, you guys used the entire, there was at one point, if you go back and watch a stream, you hear, you guys actually end up like almost mirroring an exact engagement you guys had about 10 turns before in the same spot by the middle, by like a center rock where you were just obstructed and he had kind of like 2 turned in and was sideways. And the exact same thing happened where like you did a damage and then didn't, and then he did a damage and then didn't. And then it was just back to square one. Like it was Yeah, like I said, it was very infinite loop type of thing. One thing I know that you guys did get to that point where you guys weren't having fun anymore. I do think though, in your guys' maneuver choices, there's some good information to be learned there, because in that engagement, and you stop me if I'm wrong, William. I believe, you know, Andrew was trying to get into range one because he was ahead on damage to be able to make his range one shot more devastating. You know, if you guys traded four hits and he has more health, eventually he ends up ahead in that damage race with range one shots. And then also trying to get each other to chase in order to let the bomblet be a factor. But both of you guys did a wonderful job of making sure to engage on your own terms and avoid each other's bomblets. And I just thought, you know, from a decision making standpoint and the speed at which you guys made the decision, I think it was a clinic.
Oh yeah. I mean, to expand upon what you're saying about the range ones. Oh, I knew. I very much was aware that if the range, so most of that game I had one shield, and most of the game he had three shields. I think that was pretty much the standard, right? And if that range one happens, then if I power up, he could then put three damage into me and leave me at just two hull, right? And I could only strip his shields because I can only do three damage back to him because C3PO0, and then I only have four tech dice. So the range one engagement was favoring him. There was a point, I believe, that I was up. The shields were even. I had a damage card on me, but I had two shields and he had two shields for just a moment or so. And at that point, I was like, okay, now I can go in because I have initiative. I can go in and I can power up my range one by spending a shield. And then I could put in three damage, hopefully, with a target lock focus. And that would strip both of his shields and put a damage card on him. And without a shield to power up, he would then have to, I would assume, regen, only shoot two dice, which would strip my last shield. So that in that engagement would, it would still leave him with one shield, but I would be able to put the damage card hopefully onto him. And once I got up to two shields, the tables turned, and it was me chasing him, avoiding his bomblets all of a sudden. And it was very subtle. I think we didn't say it out loud, but we definitely both knew, like, I had caught up. It was my game to all of us with two shields. I could be aggressive, and that engagement never happened. Once that was a factor, he was got me behind him. He would always move after me, so he would always get into range two, and just went back and forth. And then eventually he got up on damage. It went back to he had three and I had one shield again. Went back to how it was to begin with. So that fight may have looked like, you know, we were just chasing each other around TLT, but that entire time, you know, we're doing those calculations of like, all right, where is his bomb going to be? Where can't I be? How do I set up my engagement to where he has to follow me? Or we could do like broadsides, right? So I'm not in danger of going into his bomb. And avoiding the range ones, most of the time it was me avoiding range one because exactly. He had the advantage. But until then I got up to two shields and he had to avoid range one. And yeah, I'll be honest with you. That was some good flying. Like, I believe we executed it perfectly. So much so that we literally couldn't determine a winner. We were flying at, you know, 100% with the same lists. And in a mirror match like that with regenerators and damage mitigation, you just can't decide on a winner. It just won't happen. I was talking to Zach Matthews about this, that there used to be untimed finals. Remember that? We could still be playing.
Oh my goodness!
If that final was untimed and Chico wouldn't.
Until somebody concedes, right? That's what it comes break, down. Then, what like, it would if, come down if, to.
I mean, yeah, it would just be a war of attrition. Like, who's able to just keep that 100% efficiency for as long as possible? Oh, hey, Marcel.
Hey. Buenos días. Tardes, noches. I walked in a couple minutes ago, like 5 minutes ago, and you were talking about Miranda TLT on TLT, and you're still talking about Miranda TLT on TLT. So, question for Dion: if I play something on YouTube, will it come across? Will you hear it, or it'll just be in the background and you won't hear it?
It depends on how it would be. It would be in the background, but don't play anything okay. That's copyrighted, because then we get in trouble.
All right, then I won't. You should, though. Well, what I want, and if it gets copyrighted, give it to me. I'll put it on my channel. I'll get banned on mine. I don't care.
No.
what I would love to see is the last 17 moves, I think you said you guys went, of you guys just going back and forth, get back and forth, and then putting the loop and chewy and then doing the rollover. I want to see that in super fast forward motion. To the Benny Hill theme song. I think that would be hilarious. We gotta have it.
We gotta make it happen.
Yeah, well, put it on Facebook then. You won't get copyrighted there.
Oh, no, that's fine. I can make a separate video. That would be like a spoof video. You just can't play it on this podcast, because then we get a copyright thing. But
I think it would be hilarious.
That Benny Hill has to be out of trademark, right? That's like 40, 50 years old by now.
Yeah, so you guys said you were done. You guys came over to the booth. You explained to the people what was going on. You played some Loop and Chewy. And then from the booth, all I saw was Nate running across the convention hall with his phone yelling about the Dice app.
I was in the middle of a game, by the way. I was right. Last round of the hyperspace, and I just knew that this match was going on forever and ever, and it was like the mirror match, the stalemate that went on and on and on, circled around, that Will just described. And all of a sudden, like, I'm hearing from like the other side and everything, our match had just started, I want to say like 4 to 5 minutes, like, you know, ago, and I hear people going Dice app, Dice app, Dice app, and because I'm assuming that they're going to the final salvo, and I'm like, this is my moment, and I screeched across the whole convention center going, I have the Dice app! I have the Dice app! And then there is rejoicing. And to be fair, whose Dice app rolled better?
Yours. I was using your phone.
Exactly. Real winner, me with my Dice app. So thank you for like those templates. Thank you for that trophy. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you. You're a great placeholder.
Yeah, Will, congratulations, man. You worked really hard. And even though it did come down to a final salvo dice roll, well-deserved, you played great. You know, you put yourself in situations in order to win. That's the part of it that people don't always think about. It's like, oh, you won because of a dice roll-off. But, hey, he still got to the final and had to fight through, you know, 6 rounds of Swiss plus the cut. Just congrats is kind of where I want to end there. Now I want to go into some meta statistics. I didn't put this in their notes, so these gentlemen here don't know any of these numbers that I have right now. These are all just mine, and I want them to take some guesses here. So here's the first question, guys, and we'll take a second of silence so that people listening in their cars and at home can guess too. What percentage? Oh, let me start here. What faction had the most lists out of them all?
In period?
Just in general, like how many lists had the most? Like at the
like what?
Out of
what,
all 300?
What faction? What faction people. Out of 287?
Damn.
I'm gonna say it's gonna be Scum, just because. No, actually, I'm gonna say Rebel. I think.
Yeah,
I'm gonna say but Rebel.
Rebel, but Scum, and then
it's not gonna be the most obvious thing.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Probably, so here, it'll be Scum, rank, probably.
All right. So Marcel, what's your rankings? First, second, third.
Rebel, Scum, Imp.
Okay. Nate.
Rebel, Imp, Scum.
And William. And the answer is Rebel, Empire, Scum. Now here's the next.
Oh, I was right. What do I get?
You get. Well,
I thought it was going to be something weird. Scum. I mean, that's kind of.
But hold on. That's kind of basic. That's kind of obvious.
I'm leading up to something. Leading up to something, man.
All right. Go ahead. Let's go to start.
What percentage?
17.
What percentage of so if rebels are the most, which I said yes they are, what percentage of the list are they? Rebel lists. I want you to take a second. Don't just blurt out a number.
What do you mean what percentage of the lists?
Oh, so how
many?
How what percentage of all the facts? So you have what percentage did rebels make up of all the lists?
Oh, I'm going to out of all of total.
Correct.
I don't know. I'm gonna guess it's the most, so it has to be more than obviously 33%. I'm gonna guess at least 50% or 60%, something in there.
Well, that's a high number.
You think so?
Yeah, 60. Yeah, but I'm gonna go say high. I'm gonna say 52.
That's very specific. That is even more specific.
William. Forty-eight percent. You all lose because of Price is Right rules.
Yeah, I would say over 60, you still lose. So at least 16%.
All right. So now here's some of the things I want to break down and just kind of give some information here.
Wait, what percent was Scum?
Out of the Scum 100? Was 21%.
And what percent was it of the cut?
Not well, a lot. One out of 31.
One out of 32. Whatever
that means. Come on, math major. Come on, math teacher. Give it to me.
One out of 31. You're going to make me do stuff on my day.
You suck. You failed.
4%. 4.7%.
Leave it to the music teacher to beat the math teacher.
He has it in like a thing. I have to actually think about it. Because, you know, 3 would be 10.
You don't have to do the math anymore. It's done. 4.7%.
So out of 20% that showed up, 4% made the cut. Out of 48% that made the that came with Rebels, about 48% made the cut. So the one that statistically did better is the Imperials. What showed up to what made the cut?
From a certain point of view, I see what you're saying. I see what you're
saying. Because it, representation, 48% of the lists that showed up were Rebel. And about 48% of the cut was Rebel. 20% of the Scum that showed up, only 4% of the cut was Rebel. So that means that out of the Imperials, you had about 30%, 35% that showed up, but accounted for 40-something percent of the cut. So the Imperials actually performed the best.
They did. When you look at it, that part, yes, you could say that a higher... compared to their representation as a total for the tournament, they did make more of the cut compared to Rebels.
And now, by the way, I just said that to basically poke at Ryan Farmer and Nate for being bad at math.
Good. Yep. So here's the other numbers I want to throw out there. Okay, and I want some guesses. So, and I want you guys to understand how I'm looking at this. So, this is from every single list. I have all of them, okay? I have all of them. And I was able to, I did statistics on every single list. Strezra, in my opinion, is a sub subset of what I like to call 100-point ace lists, which right now for Rebels equals Lorik plus an ace and a support, usually Fen or Ezra, or it's a couple of other things in like some weirder ones, but that's usually what it is. It's Lorik plus a Sheath Apeed and an ace. Those lists were of the ones that made the cut were almost exclusively what Rebels had. In those lists, there were 31 out of the 287, which makes up 10% of the total field, was 100-point ace. Then the VCX list. Now, this is something that we're all, you know, we think about a lot, and we've been talking about, man, Ghost Sven. There were 27 VCX lists. So this is a Ghost plus Fen or a Ghost plus Ezra and Lorik, basically, what that is. There were 27 of those. So if you combine the 100-point ace plus the VCX, that makes up 20% of the field. I went a step further, and I weighted the performance of each of these lists using the rankings of where people fell and their score, plus what list they flew. And the highest performing lists out of them all was Ghost Fen. By far. Very close was 100-point ace. It was just really interesting just looking at these numbers that I did here. If you just take Ghost Fen plus 100-point ace, just looking at these numbers, it almost tells me like if you're not playing these lists, you're not playing the best lists in the meta right now. Anybody who's playing something else, you either need to tech against these things, or you are doing something quote unquote different. That maybe you can make it work, but it's not necessarily what is currently meta representative of the meta
in this tournament.
Correct. But what this is following a lot of the similar patterns of other tournaments. Now, this is the first tournament data that I know of that somebody went through and did data on the entire tournament, because they had every single list. Because I had them all, not just most of them, but every single one. And it's a super strong representation of what people are perceiving. And we had Adepticon has really become pretty national. Like, we had a lot of local players there, but we even had international players coming in to play at this event, because it was the first system open, so a lot of people know about it. Then if we look at just some of these other numbers, the Rebels, I mean, have by far the strongest lists currently in the meta. So these numbers might not mean anything to you, like to people listening, but I assigned a value. I call it a weighted list consistency value, and I want to give you some of these numbers. So 100-point ace was a weighted list consistency value of 42. Ghost Fen was 50. Nim Miranda, 33. So you hear where those numbers are. The highest weighted list consistency that the Imperials have was a 16, and that's for Palp Aces. And Scum, the highest was a 7, a score of 7. And that's the very broad category of Asajj plus something else. Just really interesting. You cannot argue right now that basically Rebels are on top of the meta. And if you're planning lists for premier events and regionals and all this stuff, you need to make sure that you're thinking about Rebels.
What's the common denominator on all these?
Turrets.
Rebel ones. You're gonna say turret. I'm gonna go one else. No, there. I mean, if you have to break it down to one common denominator that exceeds that. Well, turret TLT. I would outside of TLT. Let's say outside of TLT
regen.
I'm gonna go. Yeah, actually regen. I didn't even think of. But I'm regen. Actually no. I'm not gonna go regen. I'm gonna go something else.
Defensiveness. The ability to.
I'm gonna say no. This time last year, I was actually looking back at a Reddit post. Somebody commented on an old Reddit post for last year's World's Top 16. And they were doing the whole math, what's hot type of thing. And back then, the most common thing that made the scum be the most used list was Tani Mindlink, yeah. That was, you know, whether you were using Paratani or you were using triple boats or you were using some other something, it was Paratani. Now, and just by the numbers that you gave and by looking at what's been winning everywhere else, I would say it's the Sheath of Pete. I can't say it. The new shuttle is the new common denominator. And I'm saying that over regen because when you get the Lothal Fen, there is no regen in there, but there's a Sheath of Pete. When you look at the Ezra Ace, if that's what you want to call it, the Rebel Ace, which is Ezra, there's a Sheath of Pete. If you look at the list that I'm going to take partial credit for it because I helped Richard Tsu put it together, but he went 6-0 with it. It's the Fen, and also Nathan Idy's been flying it very successfully too. It's the Fen Ace. I would say the 100-point Ace Fen style, and there's the 100-point Ace Ezra style. But all of these have the Sheath of Pete in common. The only Rebel list that really doesn't have the Sheath of Pete is Nimiranda. But outside of Nimiranda, almost everything has either Fen or Ezra.
Yep. The only one that has a decent score compared to the other ones is in Rebels is Ray Plus, is basically the category that I made there. They had a pretty strong representation, but that's just because there was a lot of them, but their average score was actually pretty low.
Nate,
what's up?
You let Ray down.
Oh, sorry. I was like I had an ADD moment. I zoned out. What were we saying?
Never mind. I'll tell you here. The average score, tournament score, so out of six, right? The average tournament score for Ray Plus throughout the entire tournament was 1.5.
1.5.
How do you get the 1.5? What's the... How do you factor that?
That's our secret tech. That's not for everybody to know.
All right. Then what were the triple jumps thing?
Well, you were the only one, so it's impossible to do that math.
Oh wait, yeah, you could.
Sure. So here's your number. Your number was 4, as you won 4.
Okay.
And you were the only one.
Yay! It would have been 5 if it wasn't for those pesky kids.
That's named right. Quick draw. But yeah, so I just, you know, I did all these numbers as a way to just really take a snapshot of what this tournament looked like, because, you know, a player only gets to play so many games, but being able to look at all the lists and how everybody did, you get a good representation of just how the entire tournament went. And looking through them, there is definitely a considerable number of lists that had to be placed in what I'm going to call the other category, because they didn't fit any of the other archetypes. But unfortunately, there was only a couple that actually performed well. Most of the other category performed poorly.
Is that just because the meta right now is just so one-handed and swung in favor of like these main three lists then, or these three archetypes?
I think it could be for a couple reasons. The other lists, and this is my assumption, just kind of taking a look at it. The other lists, these you might call them scum jank, rebel jank, imperial jank. They're usually put together by players that are not as experienced or who are trying to do something different just to be different. Not necessarily doing something different and having a plan and having a reason why it works. So, for instance, Marcel brought something very different. He's the only person who brought triple Jump Masters. He's the only person who brought multiple Jump Masters.
Wow. Last year, that was like the majority of people.
Right. But he had a plan, right? He knew the reason I'm bringing this is for X and Y and Z, and this is how you execute it in the matches. A lot of the combinations were like, I understood. So I'm going to give you one example. We all know that three new squadron Star Wings and Quick Draw is a meta list, right? That is a good list. It's refined. It has three ships that move around fast and have torpedoes or has missiles. And you have Quick Draw, which is able to put out a ton of damage. Somebody took that list and, in fact, made it not as good by taking out the Star Wings and putting in bombers instead with long range scanners and harpoons. But they replaced them with ships that were not as maneuverable and didn't live as long. And they did significant, like their score was significantly lower than any of the three boats in Quick Draw. There's just a lot of those other lists. They just, unfortunately, worse versions of other things, or people just kind of trying things out the box, which is great. But, you know, in a tournament setting, if you're trying to do well, a lot of people, I don't want to say that if you want to do good in a tournament, you need to net list, but I think you need to at least be cognizant of the meta if you're trying to do well. If you're just coming to play, then that's fine. Sure. Maybe that's what it came down
to. Yeah, I think that, just for me, again, this year, definitely it's been the roughest year for me in terms of making cuts and stuff like that. I was talking of William at the end. Like, I've averaged 4-2 at every single tournament. I won 5-1 once, but that was canceled out by one time I went 3-3. So every other time it's been 4-2.
But you're also trying something different.
Yeah, every tournament I flew something different.
And something that's not really part of the mainstream meta or anything.
So. Oh, no. I got burned out last year. So this year I definitely took as every tournament was different, except the triple jumps this time was the first time that I ran 2 in a row. But anyway, back to Dion's point is when you're bringing something different, you got to bring something different, being cognizant of what the meta is. So a good example of that is when I brought Dengar Thweak to Minnesota. I took Dengar Thweak being cognizant of what the meta is. I had the expertise for the Fen Lothal list, and I had the ion torpedoes on Thweak for the Nim Miranda, which were the two hot things at the time. And so you can build things to the side that are not quote unquote the meta, but you have to be cognizant of what is the meta. So even if you're not going to fly, you have to be prepared to face that as a majority. Now, I ended up losing most of my Fen Lothal matches anyway, even though I was trying to tick against it. It's just a tough list to fly. But I think Nick Tobin is probably a good example of someone who switched his list up every time. Never flew the quote unquote meta, but always flew something that was able to beat the meta. And he flew a couple different lists, and he made the cut in Chicago. He made the cut at Gen Con. He made the cut at Wisconsin, and he constantly performed at the top. Never flying a meta list, but always flying something that was taking the meta into consideration.
All right, so then I want to move into, you know, kind of jumping back to your final will. A lot of people, when, you know, in the Twitch chat, and we've been seeing posting on Facebook and Reddit, that there people are saying like it was a perfect example of the fact that you guys got to the end state. It had nothing to do with your guys' decision not to play anymore, but the fact that you were even able to get to that point shows that they're, it's starting to show some of the flaws that X-Wing has. I think, personally, for me, I think regen is a problem. that needs to be solved at some point. Hyper defensiveness is an issue that needs to be solved. If those two things were toned down, if you guys weren't able to get to a point where your defensive tech and regen were able to basically keep you guys at a stalemate, eventually one of you would have died. Like it'll just happen. And I think ships need to be allowed to die in order to let the game, you know, progress, because you guys weren't, right? What are some fixes or changes that you think could maybe, let's talk about Miranda specifically. What would be your Miranda change if you were going to tone down her
power level? I've seen a lot of people talk about this. They said one easy...
Hi, Will.
Sorry.
Nate, shut fine. Up.
I'm going to bed. God. I'm tired. I'm just like popping in when I hear things. So,
Nate, why don't you play with your dice app, okay?
I will, because you know why? My dice app wins. Is a champion.
Actually, it's what won.
You can never take that away from it.
Champion.
So maybe, you know, we should put my dice app in Will's little, you know, like a shadow box for all of you.
In the shadow box.
How about I take your dice app and I put it in my Ziploc bag? maybe I'll win something maybe. That time.
Go ahead. Sorry, man.
No worries. There is, in my mind, a problem with X-Wing, and I can't say that it is Miranda, because, in my opinion, if you make a change to Miranda to lower her power rankings, it would simply just lower her below Nim. They tried with Nim, they really did, but they still overreached. And I think that if you want to nerf Miranda, I don't see how Nim is acceptable as far as power levels. I understand that Nim can't regen and most of the time can't have defensive abilities, which is appropriate. But his other abilities are on par, in my opinion. There's this thing right now that is essentially unlimited resources in X-Wing. The easiest example, and I'm not talking about modifiers to your dice, such as like reinforce, which is technically infinite for the round. Until you choose to not have it. But I'm talking about a bomblet generator as the prime example. There is no penalty for using it unless you bomb your own ships. And then that's simply your choice to do. But there is no penalty for literally dropping a bomb every single round. And another unlimited resource that has always been in the game is R2-D2, and being able to regenerate shields and health. Originally, R2-D2 was pretty balanced. I mean, X-Wings only had two shields. They weren't very dodgy to begin with, and Y-Wings couldn't even do them, because you're doing like 1/4 and 2/4, so you couldn't even use R2-D2. It was limited in its aspect originally, but now it's kind of expounded upon itself to reach new levels. I see no difference in a super pro who has R2-D2 than Miranda as far as healing goes, because they have an unlimited resource of that.
Sure.
Miranda has to shoot, but she's a TL, or she's a turret, so that's going to happen unless she slams. But an R2-D2, but you simply just need to dial in a green move to get that resource back. In my opinion, Gonk or the new Chopper Astromech is perfect resource management.
Uh-huh.
You have either you either need to collect up resources with gunk and shields, collect shields with gunk and then use them strategically later on in battle. Or with Chopper, you start with a limited pool of resources that you strategically use throughout the battle. There is literally no strategy of Miranda, or excuse me, there's no strategy to R2-D2, except for if you need to take a shot. I'm a Miranda player, and I use her shields as resources. I use them when I need to kill a ship. I use them when I shoot the harpoon. And in my play style, they are a resource that I use. They're not just health. And I think that's what sometimes puts my Miranda play beyond others, because I know when to use it. I know when I don't need to heal. We'll just stay at the current, you know, it's too risky to expend a shield, but I it's not a situation where I need to dampen my attack power. So I'll just not heal or do anything. And there is resource play there, but being able to do it forever is a problem. Being able to heal back all the time, and I mean,
forever.
This is, I did want to make a point, yep, that people had saw the stalemate, and sure, it had drawn attention to the problem with Miranda as far as healing and that unlimited resources that she is able to use. Miranda doesn't always win. Me and Andrew weren't bombing each other, and we had already shot our harpoon, our build was TLT, C-3PO, and Miranda is, I believe, a Wave 7 build. When Miranda came out, you could put TLT and C-3PO on her. And that has been in the game for two and a half years now, I believe. Something like that. And I don't think it's always been a problem, but it has always been an issue that has that unlimited aspect of it. And I think that if we could find a way to limit that, I would much prefer that. Honestly, if you can make all of the regen mechanics like gonk, if Miranda doesn't get to regen until I don't know how that would work actually, now that I think about it. But think about R2-D2, that kind of banking up shields, like how Rey banks up focuses. So like the first couple rounds of the game, you do green moves, and you would put the shields on R2-D2, right? And then at a certain point, when you did a green move, you right. wouldn't put it on R2-D2, you would be able to put it onto your ship. Just very similar to how gonk works. And that would be a huge step in the right direction, at least for regen.
So,
correct, yes.
So then your opponent would have some counterplay by being able to jump you so that you would have a limited amount of that resource when you guys actually engaged. I like that. Well, you know, I think this is definitely a really deep topic on how things could possibly be changed for, like, improving the game. Because, you know, that's one thing. We all love this game. We want it to continue to grow and not to stagnate. But, you know, we'll see how the meta develops. I know that we could stay on this for a long time, but I want to keep it moving. And wrap up the show today. We talked about Adepticon, and we are definitely going to be coming back to this topic of what are some things that we think need to change in order to continue to progress the meta and make sure that we don't have situations where it's not fun, which is what happened. You know that we try our hardest to keep the game as positive as possible when talking about it, and we're not trashing the game. Still love it. You know, that's why we play, and we're taking all the time to do what we do for the game. But we definitely see there's room for improvement. That's my teacher speak there. There's definitely room for improvement. Yeah. So before we go, I want to say one more time, Will, congratulations, back to back championships at the Hoth Open. Will you be able to three-peat?
Oh boy, I don't know, man. There's so much luck involved between matchups and dice rolls, and that I don't know. We'll see. I mean,
you're gonna try, right?
I'll try. And I am just as surprised as anybody else. I mean, it came down to a final salvo of whether I was the champion or not.
Right.
And it could have just as easily been Andrew, which would have been great. I will say that. One of the first things I talked to him about was like, is this, because I was unfamiliar with him. I played him before, but I was unfamiliar with his name, and like I hadn't seen him around. I was like, you know, is this like, you know, your first major event? And he's like, well, I got, I think he said top 16 at Gen Con. But other than that, no. And I was like, the master or the apprentice has become the master. The roles were just reversed. You know, I mean, last year I went up against Nathan Knighty, who was always in the top cuts, always an amazing player, and had been for years. And then all of a sudden the roles were reversed, and I was able to play against, you know, what I think is an up-and-coming X-Wing player. Look out for Andrew. He will get you.
Do you live in the Chicagoland area or plan on visiting? Come on down to Pastimes Comics and Games, the home of Gold Squadron, where we play X-Wing every Wednesday and have tournaments the first Sunday of every month. We also play Imperial Assault, Armada, LCG, and Destiny on different days. Visit our Facebook page, Pastimes Star Wars, for more information.
And I want to remind everybody that you can watch, you know, when we go to these events, we're usually streaming, so you can watch those live events and content at twitch.tv/GoldSquadronPodcast. The long forms of the streams are up on YouTube already, so you can go ahead and give those a watch. It's going to take me a little bit longer to get the individual videos up because I have we use a new computer to stream, and I haven't found video editing software that I like, and it's really frustrating to do video editing with crappy software. So I'm still trying to figure that out, but the long form is in there and it looks pretty good. So you can still give that a watch. You can always go to goldsquadronpodcast.com, get our swag there for sale, use the offer code buy 2 get 1. There's going to be some new stuff coming up in the next couple weeks. And lastly, if you want to join the largest group of people that support our content and all the stuff we do, you can go to patreon.com/goldsquadron. Thank you to them. You know, and this was a great event. I'm really happy on how us as a team, as Gold Squadron, did. We did really, really well. All of us were, you know, all of us got into like the stage 2, and then when we got to stage 3, there were still a bunch of us still in it. It was a lot of fun, and I look forward always to these big events when we can all come together and just kick some. I know I don't usually swear, but all right. So for William, Nate, and Marcel, my name is Dio Morales. Gold Squadron, out.